Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Hey, welcome to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. I'm excited to bring it to you live on Facebook as we try to now every first Wednesday of the month here in 2020. So we are here March 4th and excited to bring the group together here, those FSH Society folk out there. Hope you can join us for another fun show. If you miss this show, that's okay, because you have the capability of listening to it anywhere you find podcasts. You can find it on, we have it on Stitcher, we have it on Spotify, we have it on Google. Apple's giving us some problems posting it for whatever reason, but we will figure that out. I know I've had some requests for that, but pretty much anywhere else you can find it, it's going to be there. And tell your friends, share it, rate us, review us where you can, so then it kind of climbs up the ladder as podcasts go. But I know there's a lot of FSH people in the world, that is family members, patients, those that want to be a part of this, and they might not know it's out there. So spread the news. Let them know. Looks like in Mexico. Yeah, we're worldwide. Wow, we're global. So welcome, Luis. He's chiming in on Facebook. So you can use the Facebook chat if you'd like to interact with me. You can also send me emails, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. Follow the show on Twitter at FSHD Society. And, of course, everything is at fshdsociety.org is the website. A lot of big things going on the website. If you haven't looked and taking a peek at what's going on with the news. For instance, I know we talked about this on the last show. April 21st is the patient forum. Be a part of that. If you can't be there physically, I believe they're going to stream that as like a live webcast kind of thing. So be a part of that. That is coming up in April. It's not far away. Genetic testing news, that's becoming cheaper. Genetic testing for FSHD, a new frontier. There's an article there that was posted on the 21st of February. Read that. It's under the blog part of the FSHDSociety.org. Awesome stuff. And it looks like the, they got FSHD Connections Conference has also been posted. That's going to be in Washington, D.C. in June, I think like the 28th. So check that out. And I hope you all celebrated Rare Disease Day on February 29th, where it was leap year, right? So leap year day, however they call that. And we kind of celebrated that with FSHD Rare Disease Day. So, you know, some awesome articles and cool information that's up there. Going back, though, to what's happening with Voice of the Patient there, April 21st, if you have not filled out your information, as in the questionnaires, I think there's four or five of them. I've done mine long ago. And don't forget to do that. Huge that your voice is going to be heard. Lindsay in Ohio, welcome. You're there on Facebook Live. Welcome. And Briggs Williams, good evening from Alabama. Boom, Roll Tide, right? Right? Is that how we say that? My dog is from Alabama. So that's what we say to the dog. Anyway, welcome from Ohio there in Alabama. Awesome. So glad you guys can join us. Tonight's guest is going to be Julie Cohen. She is a genetic counselor at the Kennedy Kruger Institute. Saw her article on FSHDSociety.org's website just about, I guess you could say, the questions of this disease kind of spelled out. I printed out the questions that were posted on that article. We're going to cover some of those. Like what is the genetic cause of FSHD? Does everyone with the FSHD mutation develop symptoms? Is a genetic test needed to diagnose FSHD? Those are some of the questions we can ask her, and we'll get a lot of straight up answers. So this is a great time to have someone like this in full attention for you. So if you have live questions that you want to chime in, start thinking about that. Julie Cohen, if you want to Google her, last name is spelled C-O-H-E-N, and get a little background information. She's worked, I think, at Johns Hopkins University of Medicine. So she'll tell us a little bit about herself, I guess, how she got in this line of work. It's very interesting. We have not had a genetic counselor on in the past, so that's new. So it kind of opened up a different kind of line of questions, and I obviously stole a lot of them, though, from that article because I thought they were really good. That's what got my attention for it. So, you know, I figured we can roll some of those out, but if you have any, tonight would be a good night to ask those because I know she'll be extremely helpful in that regard. So about 6 minutes from now, she'll be joining us. I want to plug also something else, another podcaster out there. FSHD Society's own Carden Wyckoff has a podcast called Carden of Milk, kind of a wheelchair warrior type podcast. She has a trailer episode out right now, an episode one that features her first guest, which is her mom, actually. So they're out there right now. You can, after this show, follow her. You can I follow her podcast on Spotify, as I do this one. Her first show is posted. She will be our guest on the April 1st show. And so we'll have Carden on. We'll talk about her podcast. That's what I love about podcasts. It's very tough to saturate it because if you have enough time in a day to listen to several, you can. I definitely implore you to follow hers. The interview with her mother was extraordinary, emotional, raw. It was great. And I give her credit for putting it out there, as well as her mom kind of putting her heart on her sleeve. It was great. So Carden of Milk, if you search that, Carden Wyckoff's podcast, she'll be our guest in April. I usually kind of spend a little bit of time before we take a break and then bring in the featured guest, trying to transition. Either there's something that's, you know, personally weighed on my mind and I want to share with you guys, or it's just maybe opinion something. I kind of call it the monologue piece in my notes of what I do, but for lack of a better term. And tonight, I think it's something that I post on my personal Facebook page. You can follow me if you'd like on there. I'll be happy to accept your friend request. Just, you know, search me, Tim Hollenbach. And I try to keep it positive on there. And I know I'm not naive to think that everything is awesome and positive, but I really have fallen in line with the coffee bean message that I've preached before, and I hope some are able to do that and kind of adopt that thinking and in that mindset, especially in the time we are in right now. People that have FSHD and family members and friends and caregivers that are with us, I know deal with the same or similar anxieties that we deal with. What's happening next? What's happening to my body? What's going to happen? And it's a lot of fear. And I think with this news media spraying out coronavirus stuff all over the place and adding fear to our society in already a very fear-filled state, I find it very interesting. So I kind of came across this little message I guess I wanted to share. Here's a question. What do fear and faith have in common? They both believe in a future that hasn't happened yet. Fear believes in a negative future. Faith believes in a positive future. If neither has happened yet, why won't we choose to believe in a positive future? I choose faith. Play fearlessly is what I told my team last summer as I'm a baseball coach. Kind of falls in line with this mindset. Kind of falls in line with what we all deal with on a daily basis. We can fall in the trap of fear, or we can give ourselves a little vitamin of faith and trust that we will adapt and we will figure it out and we will lean on each other. We'll lean on friends or family when we need it, and be humble in our struggle, and we move out, or move on, I mean. And to me, it's a tough message when I basically took this message from a gentleman that I follow very closely, a positive thinker and speaker, John Gordon, and these were his words, and I love him. And I think I love those words because I think that it's something that we have to think about. How do we overcome fear? How do we move forward? We use faith. So I guess I implore to you during these kind of crazy times with illnesses and viruses floating around and our own struggles with the disease that we fight every day, and you're not alone. You're here listening, so you know that. Use faith. Use faith. That's my lesson, I guess, for today. So why don't we take our next break? You can go ahead and keep chiming in here on the Facebook message. some nice comments, like from Sean Wells. Thank you, Sean. You're handsome. You're too handsome for radio. That's funny. Justin Ellis here. Shout out to FSHD directors at Daytona Beach. That sounds nice. I'm in Wisconsin here, so a little chillier, but it's getting better. So shout out to all you guys. Keep those comments coming. I see Lindsay Marie has already got some questions pouring through. I think that might be fun to throw those out to our featured guest who will be coming up on the other side of the break as we bring in Julie Cohen. So hang tight. You're listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. You're listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Now a word from our CEO, Mark Stone.
It's been said that the future is not a place we are going, but a place we are creating. First in mind, then in will, and then in activity. The FSHD Society, working with researchers, pharmaceutical companies, government regulators, and you, our community and our families, is working to create a day where no one suffers the full effects of FSHD. We're working to create a day where a global community, speaking with one voice, 1 million strong, sends a message that cannot be ignored and actually becomes the catalyst for accelerating drug discovery and drug development. The FSHD Society has gone on record as saying that we will have disease-modifying therapies to our families by 2025. More than just a date on the calendar, it's the driving force behind all we do. And while aspirational, it's attainable. But it will require the best of us and the best from us, because we believe that what must be done can be done, and working together will be done. Yes, we believe that we are creating a future that's free from the devastating effects of FSHD. I want to challenge you and invite you to join us, because together we can.
Welcome back to the show. We're live here on FSHD Society Radio. Real excited to bring in our featured guest for today. And she is a genetic counselor, works at the Kennedy Kruger Institute. Her name is Julie Cohen. Hello, Julie. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. Thanks.
Excellent. Thanks. Thanks for joining us, by the way, today, spending some time chatting with us. And talking to us a little bit about, I guess, FSHD. I think we have a lot of people that are already probably got the gears turning their heads if they want to ask a question through Facebook Live here. Someone already has started to chime in with a little bit of questions. We're going to try to get to those as we go through the interview. But what I really want to start with, which I love to do with a lot of our guests, is just kind of introduce yourself a little bit and maybe all the way up to how did you get into being a genetic counselor?
Yeah, sure. So thanks for having me on. I am from Baltimore, Maryland, and I've been a genetic counselor for a little over 10 years. And for pretty much my whole career, I've worked at Kennedy Krieger in the Muscle Center with Dr. Catherine Wagner and a couple other fantastic doctors. I decided to become a genetic counselor because I really love science and genetics, but I didn't want to be a doctor. No offense to any doctors who are listening. And I didn't really want to work in a lab. So I didn't know what I wanted to do. But when I learned about the career of genetic counseling, for me, it really combined the science and the genetics, but working with people and making and helping make genetic information understandable and helping people and their families make use and come to terms with genetic conditions. So that's how I got to genetic counseling. And I didn't go into the field planning to go into working with muscular dystrophy. I was really open-minded, but I had this great opportunity to start at Kennedy Krieger. And I've been working with Dr. Wagner for more than 10 years, and I've really become passionate about muscular dystrophy and helping people, and just really excited by the research advances as well.
So what is a average or maybe typical day, if that even exists in your line of work, being a genetic counselor? Since to me, it was a unique title that I never heard of prior to this.
Yeah, a lot of people haven't heard of genetic counseling. And when, you know, if I'm in a social event and I introduce myself, the usual, oh, what do you do? What do you do? I say, I'm a genetic counselor. And the reaction is always, oh, wait, what is that? Do you like do stuff with like gene editing? So I don't edit genes. What genetic counselors are, I'll give you the background, like what that title is, because people may not know. So genetic counselors are master's level healthcare professionals. And we have specific training in clinical genetics and psychology. So it really combines those two. And genetic counselors are certified by a national board. So that's kind of what genetic counselor training is. But you're going to your question about what is a typical day like. So it does vary day to day. But on days that I'm in clinic, and what I mean by that is working with patients. So I'll work in a very collaborative way with the different doctors. So in muscle clinic, as we call it, we have a couple of our neurologists and our physical therapists and other therapists and social worker, the whole gang. And we really collaborate together as patients come through to see the doctor and get their other services.
So you're really sorry to interrupt. It's just because when you said that it almost feels like then you're kind of working the physical or the science side as well as the emotional side a little bit too?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if I were to meet with a patient or a family with FSH, so my job isn't to diagnose FSH or make treatment recommendations but what my job would be is to help that patient and their family understand what is the genetic cause of FSH? What does that mean for the individual and for their relatives? Helping facilitate genetic testing if that hasn't been done and if that would be useful to the family or the patient, helping them understand what those genetic test results mean, especially for FSH. The genetics is super complicated, and I've been doing this more than 10 years and I still get confused sometimes. So addressing and helping both with the emotional aspects and also some of the like the technical and sciencey aspects.
Why should, I mean, maybe you've kind of answered it maybe in a very broad way already, but why should an individual, you know, consult a genetic counselor?
Yes, I think everybody should see a genetic counselor, but I'm a little biased, of course. a genetic counselor in the context of muscular dystrophy could be helpful in a number of different situations. So the most common thing that usually comes to people's minds when they hear about genetic counseling is thinking about family planning or reproductive options or prenatal testing. And that's certainly one reason why a person would meet with a genetic counselor like me, is to learn about what are the chances that I could have the child with FSH? What are the options for family planning or reproduction? So that's one reason. Another reason is if someone needs help accessing genetic testing to get a confirmation of their diagnosis, if they've already had a genetic test and the results aren't straightforward, or maybe they are and they just want a better understanding of what those results mean, to know for family members, you know, how should I talk about this with my relatives and let them know that they could be at risk, and who in my family is at risk? Who else could have FSH? So those are some different reasons.
It sounds like it's almost a huge you must, if you ask me. I mean, I did not seek someone when I was diagnosed, but I can tell you right now, just with the list, what you rattled off of why it would be beneficial, I'm like thinking to myself, yeah, that probably would have helped in my first week of this, for sure.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what a great thing about my job as a genetic counselor is that I have more time that I can spend with an individual and their family explaining things and talking through things and providing support. You know, the doctors I work with are phenomenal, but they have a lot of additional things to address, like treatment, like management, like medication, like making a diagnosis. And so a genetic counselor, like in my role in the muscle clinic, we really are a team, you know, the physician and myself and then the other members of our team. And I have that time to sit and spend, you know, 30 minutes or an hour with a patient and their family, helping them understand what's going on with them.
When it comes to the science of FSHD, I know a question I hear a lot, especially for those that don't know, or if you're trying to explain it to someone for the first time, like for instance, about 10 days ago-ish, something like that, week and a half ago, I finally told my employer. So the question was, okay, like it's a muscular dystrophy thing, but then they get it confused with MS and this and that. And then we finally clear that up, and then it's like, well, what causes it? So what is the genetic cause when people, you know, ask others out there listening, like, how do I answer that? Like, what is the genetic cause of FSHD?
Yeah, so that can be answered on a number of different levels and in different amounts of detail. So at the very simplest way, you know, let's say you're just having a passing conversation with someone, you could say I was born with a change or a difference in my genetic information, and that's caused me to have muscle weakness that develops over the course of my life. So that would be like a really, you know, simple, minimal explanation. But getting a little bit more technical, so we now know that FSH is caused relates to a gene called DUX4 that is normally supposed to be turned off or not being expressed after a person is born. So we have in all of our bodies 20,000 genes, but all of those genes aren't being expressed at the same time. So what do I mean by that? An analogy, and genetic counselors love analogies, mm-hmm. is that our genetic information, our genome, is like a giant orchestra, and each of the genes are the instruments, and those instruments, those genes are always there, but they may not always be playing their song or their part of the music at a particular time or a particular volume. So it's a very fine-tuned process where certain genes get turned off and turned on at different points over a person's development. So in any case, this gene DUX4, which researchers and lots of very smart people are still trying to figure out a lot about it, but what we know so far is that this gene DUX4 is normally supposed to be silenced or turned off basically after we're born. So it's important in maybe embryonic development, like when we're developing in the womb, but after that, it really doesn't need to do its job. So in FSH, different genetic changes basically result in this gene called DUX4 getting turned back on and being expressed, and that is in some way harmful to the muscle cells. And again, there's lots of really smart people who are figuring out in exactly in what ways is that DUX4 bad for our muscles.
Does everyone with FSHD develop the symptoms?
No, people can have the FSHD genetic change and not develop symptoms.
That's the first time I've heard of that. I mean, I haven't heard the other way, but I guess I've never heard that answer, that just because you have the mutation doesn't mean you're going to develop symptoms. Do you know why that is, or is it just as strange as it sounds?
So, again, lots of smart people are working on that. We know, you know, I think we know some factors, so mm-hmm. it does relate to, or we know some predictors of who is going to, somebody with an FSHD genetic change, who's going to more likely to show symptoms or who may be at a little bit lower risk to develop symptoms. So things like the size of the deletion on chromosome 4 for people with FSH type 1. So that would be one factor. I will say that it seems that most people, the majority of people who have the FSHD genetic change, do develop symptoms at some point, though it could be milder or later onset. But there definitely is a percentage of people who have an FSHD genetic change who don't show really any symptoms.
Do they need a genetic test, though, to have the official diagnosis done?
So somebody, are you asking for somebody without symptoms or somebody with symptoms? Or maybe both?
I think maybe both. Because, and I'm kind of leading into some of the people's questions here. Maybe this might help with your question there that you gave me. So this person asks, what are the early signs of FSHD? She says, my dad has had FSHD since he was young. My sister and I have never gotten tested for it and wondering what signs we should be looking for. So to me, that kind of falls in that line. Like, should this person, Lindsay, who is asking the question, even though they know her father has it, her and her sister don't seem to, but should they go get genetic tested?
So this is a common question I get and a common reason that people come to see genetic counseling, mm-hmm. because they have a family history. They have a parent, for example, who had FSH, and they want to know, you know, am I going to get it? Can I pass it on to my children?
Right.
And the short answer is, in a situation like that, where a person has a parent who was affected with FSHD, the only way to know for sure whether or not that individual, so the person who sent you that message, the only way that she could know for sure whether or not she's at risk for FSH is to have the genetic test.
Hmm. Okay. What if, though, they don't show symptoms at all? Should they even bother? Is it more of a curiosity being kind of, you know, quenched? Because I hear that, for instance, if, like, I have FSHD. So if I went, the doctor told me that Easy does it on getting my children tested right away, because then that's on their medical history and they could have problems with insurance as it goes. So, you know, is that a falsehood as well? Like, a couple of questions in there, I suppose.
Yeah. So that what one of the first questions is, like, what would be the reason to get tested?
Right.
Is it just out of curiosity? So motivations are different for different people. So if, you know, for some people, they are concerned or they're planning on having kids in the future and they want to know, well, is this something that maybe I don't have symptoms now, but could I pass it on to my children? And they would want to know that because they might take advantage of some of the reproductive options that would be available. So that would be a reason for an asymptomatic adult to have a genetic test for FSH. So they know, is this something that I could pass on to my children?
Hmm.
Because we know that some people with the FSHD genetic change don't show symptoms, I don't think there's really ever a point that we could say just based on a physical examination that they don't have the FSHD genetic change.
Okay. That's good. I mean, I'm glad that we could answer Lindsay's question. I think we gave her some, I responded back. So I hope that gives her some clarity. When it comes to, there's another question here, because this was, you know, been in the news a little bit on FSHD Society's website about genetic testing, a new frontier was the title of the post, and how there is going to be a new form, or there is a new form available. I'm not completely clear as I browse through it, but this person watching, her name is Anna Davis, and she chimes in as well on Facebook. And she says, first she says, hey, Julie, thank you for all the information. So there you go. Just wondering.
You're welcome.
Just wondering what the advantages are of the new clinical FSHD testing methodology announced last month. So I don't know if you can shed any light on that.
I can try. So this is a very new technology. It's called, and I've been reading all about it because it's brand new. It's called single molecule optical mapping. So a very fancy, new, and different type of testing technology than the type of genetic testing that's traditionally been done for FSHD. And the short answer to her question is that I actually don't know. We don't know a lot about this type of testing, and I don't know how to answer the question of, is this, how much better is it than the traditional testing that's called Southern blot.
Okay.
It is a completely different way of looking at the DNA. And from reading the papers that have been published in the medical journals, it sounds really promising. And it sounds like this testing is able to, is just as accurate as the traditional way of testing. And this new method may have some advantages compared to the older method. But I'm not quite ready, have enough information to say, oh yeah, this is now the test that everybody should have. But it is pretty exciting. And one of the potential advantages of this new technology is that it may make testing more accessible, in that there may be more different genetic testing laboratories who can, who have this machine, the instrument that does the test. So it just may give some more options available and make access a bit easier. But I would expect that we're going to all, as a group, learn more about this. I'm actually going to a meeting later this month with the FSH folks, and I look forward to hearing from the people who developed this technology to learn more about it.
For those just chiming in, we're talking with Julie Cohen. She's a genetic counselor at Kennedy Krieger Institute. We're getting pretty deep already, very quick with your answers. I think a lot of people are probably shaking their heads and like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. Or I think you're doing a great job shedding some light here. When it comes to, since you're talking about genetic testing, is where we kind of were tailing into. If a health insurance company refuses to cover, you know, a patient's genetic test cost on the grounds that it would not affect medical care, how should that person or that patient respond to that?
Oh, insurance companies, yeah, what a love-hate relationship, right? And I swear, I need a PhD just in dealing with or figuring out health insurance guidelines, so let alone all my genetics training. No, kidding aside, working with insurance companies can be challenging. And especially when it comes to genetic testing. So I would say that you need to have an advocate on your side. So your neuromuscular specialist or a genetic counselor who's working with you, because they're probably going to have better success in, appealing or arguing to your insurance company. But when insurers come back and say, oh, well, it's not going to change medical management, I think in a lot of cases we can make an argument that it would change medical management. You know, having a definite diagnosis could avoid unnecessary treatments and tests. For example, we know, thankfully, people with FSH, or the FSH doesn't affect people's hearts, whereas in other types of muscular dystrophy, there can be serious heart problems. So if we confirm that a person has FSH, then they don't need to see a cardiologist every year.
Right.
For example, screening for things like some hearing issues or some vision issues. So knowing a definite diagnosis does affect potentially management. It would also potentially, getting a diagnosis by genetic test, you wouldn't need to do something like a muscle biopsy, which is also quite expensive and invasive. So these are some of the arguments that I make with a health insurance company. And I've definitely found, over my 10 years of doing this, that in my view, I think it's got insurance coverage for genetic testing has gotten better, not worse. But still, there are some folks and some types of insurance that just flat out won't cover it. So in those instances, if you really can't get your insurance to cover it, you could consider paying out of pocket for the testing. It's a lot of money, at least a couple hundred dollars, maybe more. So then in that, that situation, then you have to, really balance, like, okay, how important is it to, to me to get that genetic information? Now, but let me also say, I did learn recently through the FSH Society that the FSH registry in Rochester, there may be an opportunity for individuals who are motivated to participate in research to get involved with that registry, and there may be a way to get genetic testing done through there. So,
yeah, I know.
And of course, there's other benefits to participating in the research.
That's true. Yes. Especially when you said muscle biopsy, I started to get the willies. I had that done last spring. That was not fun. But it was, I was glad I did it. I don't regret it because it was for a study. But that's not exactly the most pleasant experience with it. And I know with the genetic testing, when I had my genetic testing done, I mean, I'm still paying that off. So it's,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking, mine was thousands of dollars. So it's like, this is, it's insane. So the fact that if they're seeing a cheaper option, that would be, you know, helpful, obviously. And then the answers that they want to get, you know, will come from that at a little less cost. But since we're on the subject,
go ahead. The cost of genetic testing, while it still is quite expensive, it has gone down. And also I do think that in the past, some of the, you know, genetic testing laboratories overcharge for testing. Mm-hmm. And because I've heard so many stories and patients of my own who, you know, get these many $1,000 bills. So I think it's, if you're a smart consumer and if you choose a lab that's transparent with what their prices are, and, you know, pay the lab directly based on what like their list price is, you can, you know, get a better deal than some of the older companies who maybe did take advantage of people.
That's good. That's good information. Definitely. Since we're talking though about, you know, insurance and covering tests, but how about the vantage point of, you know, life insurance, you know, getting possibly denied? I know someone chimed in here and says it's also true that life insurance should be obtained prior to testing. So before you start doing that, should you kind of get all your ducks in a row first? I guess what's your advice on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are some legal protections against genetic discrimination, but there's also some limitations there. So there's a federal law called the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, or GINA. It was enacted maybe in, I think it was 2008, maybe 2009. So what GINA says essentially is that health insurance companies and employers really can't make decisions based on a predictive genetic test result. So if, let's say, the person who wrote in a little while ago with a question about her dad had FSH, she doesn't have symptoms, should she get tested? So let's say that she did had a genetic test for FSH and it was positive, meaning that she's at risk to develop FSH in the future. Well, this law called GINA says that her health insurance company can't make decisions based on that. They can't drop her, they can't raise her premiums, they can't not cover her. And also her employer can't make decisions based on that information. There's some limitations to GINA. And an important ones is that GINA doesn't apply to life insurance, long-term care, or disability insurance. GINA also doesn't apply if a person is already manifesting symptoms of that condition. Now, there's other protections like the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, that has protections for people with pre-existing conditions with getting health insurance. But that still doesn't apply to life insurance, long-term care, disability insurance. So if you have a plan, a policy that's already in place, my understanding is that a genetic test result wouldn't change it. Like, they can't take away your policy. Mm-hmm. I also don't know, you know, not all life insurance or long-term care or disability insurance, you know, I don't really know what questions they ask, and they may or may not be asking about genetic testing, but they could. Mm-hmm. So that's a long answer to a tricky question.
There are,
thankfully, there are a number of protections in place, but there are some limitations to those laws.
There's another question here I wanted to field for you here or pass on to you off Facebook. This person's name is Gail, and Gail asks that she tested for FSHD1 and for FSHD2 in her limb girdle test through Emory. I understand my next step would be a more specific test for FSHD2, which I was told is only offered in two places. So then she finishes with, what could I learn at the next level test? So I guess maybe she's asking what would she learn anyway of the FSHD2 test?
So I can't, I don't know that I can answer that question because I think I would need some more context about
you know, whether she has symptoms of FSH or this is like a rule out situation, and like what I'm not also not sure quite like what the next level testing means. But what I would say is that this is a perfect situation to talk to a genetic counselor, because a genetic counselor could help her understand what testing has already been done, what that's found and looked for, and what it hasn't looked for, and what that next level testing that she's referring to, what that could tell her and might not tell her, and what, you know, she could do with that information. So that's exactly the sort of thing that we genetic counselors are specially trained to do.
Excellent. Okay.
And if you're wondering, how do you find a genetic counselor? Well, there's a very handy website called findagageneticcounselor.com.
Come on.
And that is the National Society of Genetic Counselors directory, where you can search for a genetic counselor in your area. There's also a number of telegenetics companies out there. So these are companies that employ licensed, certified genetic counselors who can provide consultations and counseling by phone or video.
Nice. Excellent.
Yeah.
Man, you should have just hosted the show all on your own and been the guest, because that was a beautiful segue. I was just about to ask that. So how do they find one? You were on it. I love it.
Well, that's how they find one. Exactly. And if I may also please take a moment. So there is just to ask for the FSH Society members' support for some important legislation. So currently Medicare does not recognize genetic counselors as healthcare providers, if you can believe that. So that means that patients who have Medicare insurance can't see me for genetic counseling. Or if they do, well, at Kennedy Creek, we have a way around it. But for the most part, they can't access a certified genetic counselor. But there is a federal bill that's currently being considered. It's called H.R. 3235, and that would change that. And there's a handy website called www.hr3235.com. And if you go on that website, there's an easy link where everyone listening can send a little message to their representative and say, hey, this bill is really important to me because I need to be able to access genetic counseling.
Excellent.
So what was, do that, everyone.
And what was that last website you said, HR3235.com?
Yeah, HR3235.com. And let me thank the FSH Society, which as an organization has signed on a letter of support. So FSH Society as an organization supports the bill. Thank you. But we also need individuals to talk to their representatives.
Nice. Here's another question that I know I've thought of, and I know it was on the list that was, you know, posted about you on FSHDSociety.org's website, which is, you know, kind of how I got in tune to who you were and how I wanted to have you on this show. And this was something that was brought up when I was diagnosed, and then the questions came up because I have two boys, and then my wife was extremely concerned, obviously, then about passing it on, etc. So why are some family members more severely affected than others? Because that seems to be the fear, I know, especially it was in my wife.
Yeah, that is a big fear, because I talk to people all the time who say, you know, if I have a child and he or she has FSH like me, you know, like that might be hard, but I would be okay with that because look, you know, I've had a happy, successful life, but what I would be so fearful is if my child was much more disabled.
Right.
And I, you know, that's so hard, because we really can't predict based on a genetic test result or a parent's level of symptoms, to what extent a child would be affected or not. So again, there's really smart people who are working on answering this question. And we know there must be other genetic factors and maybe some non-genetic factors, but aside from things like deletion size and, you know, other technical things like methylation, we're really not quite so sure yet.
That's interesting. Yeah, because even my neurologist, he didn't flat out say it, but he was kind of almost hinting the fact that if it gets passed on, and that's the term he used, you know, it could very well be worse in the next generation, not better per se. So it's almost reassuring that you're saying there's really no predictable factor one way or the other. You know,
there's really not. Yeah, it could be, you know, a child of a person with FSH could be very similar, could be more affected, could be less affected, could be, you know, asymptomatic their whole life.
How about skipping a generation? Or is that like, you know, something that's more of a misconception?
So it's a little bit of a misconception, but for a condition like FSH, it's tricky because it can appear to skip generations because you could have, say, a grandparent with FSH and then a parent who doesn't have any symptoms, and then the child, the grandchild does. So the genetic change, so like the deletion on chromosome 4 or the genetic variant in the SMCHD1 gene, so the genetic change itself cannot skip generations, but the condition can appear to skip generations because someone who has the genetic change may not show any symptoms or may have only very mild or subtle symptoms.
Someone asks Candace Norman here on Facebook. She's asking, what about saliva testing? I don't know if you need more specifics than that, Julie.
So some types of genetic tests can be done on saliva samples or cheek swab samples as opposed to blood samples. FSHD testing really does need to be done on a blood sample. The gene, the SMCHD1 gene, the gene by itself, there are labs that will look at that gene just by saliva, but for the most part, it really needs to be a blood sample just because of how the test is done and the amount of DNA and the quality of DNA that's needed.
Now, when I told my mother that I had this, and I got diagnosed when I was just after 40 years old, and that was only, you know, 4 years ago, so everyone do the math. You know, and she didn't seem, she tried to hold in, I think, that she was upset. It wasn't until a couple conversations later that, you know, some of her guilt and feelings of that came out, that she was feeling guilty and upset that, why didn't I see it a little bit? You know, why didn't I notice? And my response to her was, I think it was almost better no one did because or do anything, because then I think I would have been protected, like, been put in a bubble, so to speak. Oh, you can't do that sport because you have this, or you shouldn't do that because of this. Is there some truth to that in my thinking? You know, that maybe it was better that I wasn't tested younger and that there weren't enough symptoms maybe even to trigger that kind of, you know, thought process. But, you know, is there some benefits of someone not knowing right away?
Potentially. So, I mean, it sounds really cliche, but every person and every family is very unique. And, you know, I've worked with hundreds of families over the course of my career with muscle disorders and thousands with, if you count all of the patients I've ever seen, and every family is so individual. And there are some families where, you know, they'd rather not know. But other times where they would want to know for their child at the time they start showing symptoms. We generally don't recommend testing children who don't have symptoms because we want people to be able to decide for themselves. Mm-hmm. But also over the course of my career, I've just been really constantly amazed with how resilient families are and how resilient people are, and, you know, getting difficult news and difficult diagnoses, that it's not easy. It may not always be easy, but that, you know, they really kind of come through with whatever those circumstances are eventually. So I think what happened in it obviously worked out just great for you.
Right.
But I think it probably also would have worked out well if you had known at a younger age, if you know what I mean. Like, I think that I just have lots of, you know, faith in people, what I've learned over my years doing this.
Yeah. It's kind of like, let your faith, you know, or your instincts, I suppose, be your guide. If a child has some symptoms, you should probably just, you know, make that choice in the moment. And I think everything is as unique as the disease is the uniqueness of how are you going to handle it, either getting genetic tested or not, and when, and then how do you handle the news from there, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And if you need help with, you know, with these decisions, you know, talk to a doctor who knows about FSH, talk to a genetic counselor, mm-hmm. You know, certainly if a child is having symptoms and you're concerned that they're having muscle weakness, definitely take them, you know, to get evaluated for that. Maybe they don't need a genetic test right then if the doctor can give some more certain information just based clinically based on symptoms. And if a child doesn't have any symptoms, we recommend, you know, letting them as they get to an appropriate age to be teenagers, they can start being informed that there's a possibility for this. And then they can make that decision for themselves, whether or not they want to find out their status.
And someone, you know, listening now, I've asked this question a lot to our guests. I know you've kind of almost ventured into this answer already as you were just talking, but kind of what is your keystone advice besides maybe seeing a genetic counselor? I think that's now huge advice, and I'm going to add that in when people ask me. But if they're newly diagnosed, they're handling the news now. And in my case, it was, I didn't even get handed a pamphlet. It was just, you have this, no cure and no treatment, and we'll see you in a year. And that was kind of it.
Yeah.
So for those that have had that put on their plate, what would you give for some advice or final thought, I suppose?
So advice for someone who's newly diagnosed and not really given a lot of information or support. Well, I think the FSH Society is such a great resource. I was sitting here in preparation for this interview just reading over the latest issue of The Advocate, and there's so much, you know, nowadays, thankfully, there's so much support and community online. So I guess I don't have a great answer, but just find support somewhere, you know, talk to a friend or a family member or the FSH Society. And I guess my other advice would be that even if the person that you're seeking support from doesn't know anything about FSH and doesn't know how to pronounce it, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay, right? You know, because the experience that you might be having getting a rare diagnosis, yeah, that condition is really rare, but that experience of getting maybe bad news or unexpected information or scary information, other people can relate to that, even if it's not in the context of a rare muscle disease. Mm-hmm. So just seek support somewhere.
Support. Awesome advice. Well, thanks, Julie, for joining us today. I really appreciate your time. And man, you've done such an excellent job answering, I know, a lot of questions for people, even on the fly as we were going here. So I appreciate that.
Oh, sure. My pleasure.
If someone had any more follow-up questions that they wanted to ask you, is there a way they can find you somewhere, send you an email or something like that? Or
yeah, let's see. Where I'm trying to think if my email's on the FSH Society. Yeah, they can shoot me an email. So my email is, it's my last name, CoHenju at kennedykrieger.org. I just want to give a caveat that I can't provide genetic counseling,
sure,
like by email or by phone.
Understood.
Just because of licensure issues. But okay. So I don't want to get like super bombarded with emails just asking, sure, for advice, because then I would feel bad that I can't answer everyone's questions.
Understood.
But that is my email address. But also check out I did this, I wrote this FAQ or question and answer about genetic testing that's up on the FSH Society website. And June and I worked for a long time on getting all of the wording on that just right, and I think it does answer a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. To find that article there on the website, huge, huge help, which is why I pulled a lot of these questions up. It made my job easier when it came to the researching.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Thanks again, Julie. Probably have you on again in the future. You're a phenomenal guest, and I have a funny feeling I'm going to get
some emails
too.
I'd be delighted to come back. Yeah.
Awesome. You take care. Thanks again,
Julie. All right.
Julie.
Sure. Good night, everyone. Thanks for listening.
So that's Julie Cohen, works at the Kennedy Krieger Institute. She did leave her email, but I kind of agree with her. Don't bombard her with it unless you're trying to maybe a couple quick follow-up things, kind of maybe, you know, skating on thin ice there with helping over email. So I guess I'm going to lead you to this, that if you want to find a genetic counselor, go to findageneticcounselor.com. And check out the HR3235.com site so that genetic counselors can kind of, you know, I guess get the credit they deserve and kind of help probably in medical billing that they would be considered you know, medical professionals, and that might help in that regard too. So check that out as well. So I'm really happy that she came on. I was, I don't want to say it was one of those interviews I was preparing for that was very easy because there was such a great article there on FSHsociety.org's website. And it was awesome because the questions were there. These are all the things I wanted to know when I was early diagnosed. So I immediately reached out to June Kinoshita to reach out to Julie so we could set up a time where she could be on the show. And I'm really glad that it worked out this soon in the year to kind of help people with this information. So I hope that there was some definite value for all of you listening on board. I really appreciate the questions. It was awesome. We had, you know, sometimes I'll do some news and notes. We might go a little over if I kind of talk that way. But there was a follow-up question. Let's see here. I'm going to try to track it. And it wasn't really necessarily about genetic testing, but I guess I was curious to try to give my two cents. It was Lindsay Marie said, any tips on having FSHD and dating? Sometimes I find it being hard for my dad to date because he needs his caregiver to help him get ready and go to the restroom. And I can imagine that's probably awkward. I've tried to help him, but I would appreciate any tips. So there's that question is out there. So if someone wants to answer that, if they have tips when it comes to dating, I personally have not had to deal with that. I would just, man, it's tough for me to search for a full out, hey, go ahead and do this. I'd hate to leave you astray and go the wrong direction when it comes to advice on that. But I guess it'd be full disclosure to the person that he would be going out with that, you know, this is part of it. So yeah. Interesting. Interesting. And I know there's a lot of people that cope with that. We've had past guests that have talked about intimacy questions and dating, especially even in a marriage or partnership situation where the person that you're intimate with is also your caregiver, right? I mean, your husband, wife, you're married to each other, your life partners, and obviously you're intimate too, and you kind of have to do this other thing, being a caregiver. And how do you juggle that? So we've had some phenomenal guests in the past. Jen Eggert is one that comes to my mind very quickly as I put myself on the spot to try to recall those interviews. And it was amazing to listen to her. So you want to find those past episodes. They're all there for you on Google Podcasts and Spotify, and listen to those interviews. They give some great advice in regards to dating and those kinds of things. So I really appreciate though everyone chiming in with those questions. It's awesome. And feel free to do that every show if you have some questions that you want to shoot out. If you have emails for me, if you want to just ask me a question, it's great. I'd be flattered to chat back and forth. You can email me anytime, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. That's the email address that I'm connected to there. So I wanted to quick hit a couple things that are going through when it comes to the news. It seems always this happens, right? The Connecticut chapter meets virtually the day after these shows usually air on a Thursday. So they're going to have their virtual meeting tomorrow. If you want to RSVP Kathy at the CT chapter at fshdsociety.org, March 5th, 7 p.m. to 8:30. So that's fun. I've sat in on a couple of those. And they're a lot of fun. The people have a speaker that's going to be available at this next one. I can't recall which. It's not on my copy, but check that out. Email Kathy and be a part of that. The Mid-Atlantic chapter of FSHD Society presents Pickin' for a Cure Saturday, March 7th. That's coming up this Saturday, featuring the Dirty Grass Players with Buffalo Wobs and the Price Hill Hustle. Doors open at 7. Rams head on stage. That's 33 West Street in Annapolis, Maryland. You can get tickets. Link is all there at fshdsociety.org. So check that out. That sounds like a fun time. Live music. Looks like for FSHD Society and kind of raising some money there. That looks like a lot of fun. Also, you can join the St. Louis chapter meeting on March 11th, 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. St. Charles County Library. That is in St. Charles, Missouri. Just reading the show notes, looks like they're going to have a good time. You can go to St. Louis chapter at fshdsociety.org. You can email them. Marsha Severdrup is the director there. And then finally, it looks like we got a bunch of things happening on the end of the month here on the 28th. Chicagoland, they're going to have their first chapter meeting there in 2020, Saturday, March 28th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Mount Prospect Library. So check that out. Idaho chapter launch, 12 p.m. to 2 at Louis Pizza, an Italian restaurant. Wow, that sounds delicious. I have a friend that lives out there. Maybe I'll have to do a friend visit and then grab a slice and hang out with you guys. 2500 East Fairview Avenue in Meriden, Idaho. So that's on March 28th, their big launch. Kansas City has a chapter meeting also on the 28th, 1 to 3 p.m. at Frontiers, the University of Kansas Clinic. And check it all out on fshdsociety.org. I just get all that information that I just read off to you just on their calendar of events. I just like to kind of share that with you since I have your attention here on the show. So a shout out to Jerry Blum. Hi from Minnesota. Hey, how's it going? So thanks, guys, for being here. Thanks for being part of the show. I hope you come back in April as I'm going to bring in a phenomenal guest, I believe. Carden Wyckoff is going to be our guest in April. And what I love about it is the fact that she has a brand new podcast out. So after this show's over, if you're still hankering for some podcast, you can go ahead and check out Carden of Milk. She has a awesome first episode up right now, and her first guest is her mom. And they talk about some great things and really share emotion on that interview. She does a phenomenal job, so check that out. She will be our guest April 1st. We'll be back here live on Facebook. Thank you all for joining me. We'll see you next month. I appreciate you. Take care. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show.